I'm Ryan.
I'm Schaefer.
And I'm Matt.
We're Dear Lord, and you're listening to the Doom Tomb.
This is the Doom Tomb Podcast, a podcast for all things stoner, doom, and sludge. And today we have a return. Zach Cry from the band Hoodoo Akil, spell Hoodoo Akil. And he has a release coming out on the 15th of August called Eye for an Eye. You are not going to want to miss this. It is killer, killer desert rock, man, in all shapes and forms. Enough of my talking. Let's get into the interview right now.
All right. So, you know, I'm in Arizona and I'm in Phoenix. Well, I was in Phoenix and then I traveled what I feel like kind of the end of the earth, but it's not really. And, you know, I've been out in Arizona for a couple of years, yet I just have barely scratched the surface of seeing places in Arizona. So I'm actually over in Buckeye. And I am with Zach from the band Hoodoo Akil. Zach,
what
how you
up?
Doing?
What's up, Chris? How you doing?
Another great day, man. You know, we're just hanging. It's I gotta say, we talked a little off mic about this, and getting on mic is just so weird. Getting back to having a human being next to me to talk to, microphone to micro, you know, face to face. It's such a different concept.
You gotta come all the way out to Buckeye for that, man.
Well, hey, why not? I mean, I know that the area is being built, and I can always tell, like, when I go out to Queen Creek or et cetera, when I see a two-lane road, I know that there's something going on. Like, it hasn't been built yet, but it's on the verge of blowing up.
Uh-huh. You're down in the cut.
Yeah, man. So how long you been out here?
Going on, this is my second year here now. I still got another year left at this place before we even go anywhere, so.
Where are you thinking of staying? Or are you thinking of moving somewhere else?
Oh, we're definitely going to, like, start looking into buying a place, so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to stick around here once our lease is up.
You think maybe closer to, like, the Phoenix area?
Yeah. Yep, most definitely. It's hard to say because it's growing out here so fast. You know, you start thinking about investments and stuff like that.
Right.
Bill Gates just bought all this stuff right out here.
Really?
Oh, yeah, like a whole lot of acres. He's going to build a smart city out here.
Okay, what is a smart city? I don't know this.
It's going to be all, like, green energy, renewable energy, solar, and smart cars and, like, everything's automated and stuff like that.
I don't know if I can fit in a smart car. Yeah. Have you seen those? It's like you gotta go outside to change your mind.
You look like you can pick one up.
So, you know, we talked a while ago. The last time, and when I say that, I mean on a podcast for an interview. We've talked several times beyond that. I see you at a bunch of shows. We were lucky enough to have Hoodoo Akil at Planet Mammoth 2020. Thank you so much.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a great time. And also that's, you know, this has been, I don't know how many podcasts we've been through so far, and I've traded drunken fans or people that might have had too much herb or something in the background to now I get barking dogs
barking
in the background.
Dogs.
Yeah. It's a nice trade. Yeah. I mean, the dog, you, looks like you got a lover right there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, looks like it's a daddy's boy. Or daddy's girl, I don't know.
Yeah, she's daddy's girl most of the time. My Cali girl right here.
So, okay, so the last time we talked regarding an interview was in 2018. We had this tour, and I interviewed you at the Rogue Bar. And I don't know if you remember, you had the Sinbound, and the band Heavy was on there. I think Venkman's not able to make it that day?
Yeah, I think they were originally on the bill, but they ended up not being there.
Yuma's kind of far, and yeah. I think they're based in Yuma.
Yeah. From Scottsdale it is. That's where the Rogue Bar is, right?
That's where it was.
Yeah, it was.
R.I.P. You know, they had to clear the way for some gentrification. I've kind of actually just avoided going to that area because it's just, I miss that place already, you know?
I've been in that area and looking around like, what the hell? I've been here before. Like, whoa.
They're really changing it.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Wow. So, okay, so here's the thing. When I saw you at the Rogue Bar, I could feel it. I felt, you know, it must have been a massive undertaking to create and book the tour, book all of the shows. I kind of felt it from you at the time, a little bit of emotionally draining. And it's like, I can only imagine, I'm going to assume that for the tour, for the merch, for everything, you kind of ponied up the majority of the cash.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I looked at it as like an upfront investment because I thought that we'd have a little more, we'd be able to get a little momentum going and have a little more longevity. So
right.
I looked at it as not like a one-time deal, but like an upfront investment.
Sure. Now, did it did it get you after, like, after the tour? I felt personally like I think you needed to take a little bit of a break.
Mm-hmm. Well, the very last day of the tour, what we played in Yuma, and the next night we played up here at... I think we played at the Yucca Tap Room, and then that night I stayed here in Phoenix. I never even went back to Yuma. I just got a job here. I already had it lined up, so I went straight from tour to a new job in a new city.
Oh, jeez.
And then I told my landlord back in Yuma that we're leaving out of here next month. And then so the pressure was on, man. And yeah, once I got here, I wanted to keep the ball rolling and keep the momentum going and stuff, but you're sure. Right. I did kind of need a break, and plus I had all this new stuff going on around me and stuff, so I needed some time to kind of figure out the move, you know?
Absolutely.
Get a game plan going.
Yeah, recharge the battery and make way for, well, what's coming up, and we're going to get to that really, really quickly. Now, you know, it's funny. We've been to some shows and together, and you know, you've seen the crowds, and there is that point that I always feel like, you know, if as many people, even if like a tenth of the people that follow the band would come see the show, it'd be a freaking packed house. Mm-hmm. And you know, some of it with local bands I could understand where they say, well, I'll catch them next time. Well, since February or March, there hasn't been a next time, and I think that when this comes back, I don't know if it's going to blow up. I don't even know when we're going to have shows again, but I wonder if, like, people are thinking now, like, oh, I took that time for granted. I should have went out, you know, like, and it's kind of silly in a way because, you know, sometimes it's on a weeknight and you get, you know, you get out late, and I always thought about it, you know, I'll get enough sleep when I'm dead. Mm. And I'd rather have the experiences because... I've missed seeing Stevie Ray Vaughan before he passed. I missed seeing Dave Brocky from Gwar one more time before he passed. I missed Dick Dale was going to play in Arizona. And I kept saying, oh, yeah, I know he's going to come around again. Missed him too. Was there any band or any particular person that you wanted to see and then they passed away?
Actually, yeah, when we first moved out west here that same year, Chris Cornell was playing with Temple of the Dog.
Really?
At the Forum in L.A., right? So at the time, I didn't realize L.A. was so far from Yuma where we were living.
Right.
I actually bought the tickets before we even moved to Yuma. Ooh. So I had these tickets for like 8 months. And then when the time finally came, It just came at a bad time for us, and we ended up not going.
Right.
We didn't make the trip to L.A. to go see him. And then, man, like 2 or 3 months later, he was gone.
That's funny that you even mentioned this because last night, I go down a rabbit hole more, usually when my wife falls asleep, and I'll start listening to music, and I'm looking through Bandcamp for new bands and such. But I always kind of gear towards something I want to hear that I haven't heard for a while. And we were, we went and listened to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony and with Stevie Nicks opening. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn, man, it's such an incredible performance. And it just got me down a hole. I don't exactly remember. I bet if I look up my YouTube history, it'll tell me the rabbit hole that I went down. Somehow I wound up listening to Mother Love Bone. Mm-hmm. And just like, wow, incredibly underrated.
Right.
I know I've talked about him before, but some of that music, and it, you know, I kind of felt it because maybe because I was listening to your new release, because there's something where every time I see you or talk to you in person, such a casual, it's a casual guy, you know, just hang out, you're there for a good time or what have you. But when you're performing or when I hear the music, it's a different animal. I feel like it's like a Jekyll and Hyde, and it reminded me, there was a song from Mother Love Bone called Man of Golden Words, and it's like, words and music are my only tools, communication. Do you feel that you communicate differently when you're creating music?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's what drawn me to pursue any kind of endeavor in music, really, is just to be able to communicate things and feelings and ideas and stuff that you really can't just, I don't know, for me it's just like I feel a lot of things, so playing music and stuff helps me to express that stuff. And even if I didn't do it for people, that same animal that you're talking about on stage, that's what's in the room, in the bedroom.
Yeah.
When I'm writing the stuff, or when I'm alone, you know, when I'm working on it. So I think it's just a major form of expression for me. And I think it's like my main form of expressing myself and getting that itch out. And I don't really have another one. So to be able to do that in front of people and stuff, how can really switch into that mode and let it out, you know?
Yeah, basically, yeah. It doesn't matter whether it's through music, through art, through something else, and yours is obviously music, mm-hmm. without question. Now, we're going to get into the recording process in a little bit. You did the majority of this or all of this at Switchblade Sound?
Yeah, we did everything at Switchblade.
Okay, we're gonna go over that. Now, the name of the release, Eye for an Eye, how long have these ideas for this release been circulating?
I'd say since we dropped the Who Do I Kill self-titled album, at least 3 or 4 of these songs on this album have been written.
Okay.
And then it was our aim to bang out enough songs to do a full-length album. So the lineup of this album has changed a few times.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? We're going to get into that. And also, you've got a lot of, I would say, guest stars on this album.
Oh, yeah.
So before we get into the music, let's talk a little bit about the album cover. Who did the artwork, and why'd you choose that?
David Paul Seymour did the artwork for me, and I got the idea originally from my good buddy back home, Joshua Foster. He drew up a sketch for me, and it kind of had a lot of the same elements as what the artwork that we have now is, which was like this like kind of native tribal looking chick that was wearing like an animal skin on her head, and she had like this orb that she was looking into. And I tried to get him to draw me to do it for real for me.
Sure.
Because I love working with people around me, you know.
Yeah.
My friends and close friends and family.
Totally.
You know, keep it in the circle.
Yep.
But I just couldn't really get them motivated, or for whatever reason. So I had to go with the next person, you know, because I couldn't really wait around.
Right.
So I kind of explained that. I just described that to David Paul Seymour, and that's what he sent me, and I was just thrilled with it.
That blows my mind, because I've had work from David Paul Seymour. I can actually see it right here. Mm-hmm. And I've had work from Justin Whitmer and Steven Yoyada, even some local people as well. The drummer for Takeover and Destroy, you know, I mean, fantastic stuff. And it always boggles my mind, because you talk about creative expression, and through yours is through music. And I'm just fascinated that I say, I want this, this, and this, and boom, it's done. Here you go. Mm-hmm. And it's like a day.
Yeah.
It takes a day, or, you know, or 2 days. By the way, shout out to Creature from Takeover and Destroy for just knocking it out of the park.
Woo woo.
I don't know if you saw it. Did you see his print? It was that really brightly colored mammoth. It was at Planet Mammoth.
I don't know.
I'll have to show you a picture. He just, Jay just crushed it, and I think I have to reach out to him to get something else. Because like you said, keep it local, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Keep it with your friends, and that makes complete sense. Now, is this woman, is it just a human? Is this another being? Does this carry over somewhere into one of the songs?
I just like the tribal idea, the tribal imagery of it, and inside the orb that she's looking into is like a crow. So that was all David Seymour's artistic, that was his direction. I didn't really have much say on it, but I like to think of it as like she's looking at the orb, there's a crow in there. You know, once she's dead, she'd probably get picked clean by the crows, and then so it's like a cycle, you know.
Yeah, circle of life.
Right now, she's got the crow in the hand, right?
Right.
So a bird in the bush is worth an eye for an eye, or something like that.
Sure, we'll go with that. Yeah. And speaking of hands, or maybe even fingers, Three Finger Lid a couple years ago. Now you had three tracks off that. Ain't It So, Possession, and 30 Minutes. Now, when you go back and you listen to that, how do you think your sound has changed from Three Finger Lid to Eye for an Eye?
Well, it's definitely progressing. When I think about our music in a long scheme of things, I want the albums to kind of progress and all be different from one another. And when we started out, it kind of had more of we were like a three-piece, and it was more of a grungy, like White Stripes vibe, but still a lot of those heavy psychedelic like psych rock vibes.
Right. And so, you know what? I think we should just get into it. How about it?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Eye for an Eye, August 15th, 2020. You released some tracks already. I you could see the notes here. I just went crazy because there was so much that I heard. To me personally, each song, just when I think it's going to zig, it zags. It gets so intricate, so layered. There's so much to take in each track. The first thing I wrote, and you could actually see it, you got to get up and move with this fucking music. You just got to move around. I mean, you know, in going through the tracks time after time, I mean, just hearing it, it's so crisp. The mix came out incredible. This might be like one of the top desert rock albums of 2020. I mean, shit, no, seriously, because it all sounds so good. Your guitar work, there's times when it's so frenetic and so crazy, and then you go into these tasty licks, these tasty riffs, where it's just like I see a lot of Texas. I hear a lot of Texas. I hear a lot of,
We all want to support the bands we love, and a great way to show your support is to get in the Swamp Crew. Join the CD of the Month subscription at The Swamp Records, and each month you'll get an exclusive CD from a heavy underground band, along with stickers and over 125 digital albums on Bandcamp. Bands like Greenhog, who we just interviewed, Lunar Swamp, Grave Disgrace, and many, many more. Join this month to get a free Doom Tomb sticker. Your first month is also free. How can you beat that? Get in the Swamp Crew each and every month, and you will be supporting the music you love. Go to theswamprecords.com/doomtomb to get your free CD and your free Doom Tomb sticker. Stay heavy, my friends.
You know, that almost like a country swagger in some things, but this is by far nowhere near a country album. Let's start out with the first track. This is an intro, and we're about to go on a journey. Now, why'd you start off with an intro?
Well, this lick right here for the intro is what I wanted to use as a recurring theme. melodically throughout the album to kind of try to tie everything together as like a concept. So I think we ended up taking out one interlude that went on the back half of the album just to shorten it up.
Right.
So that interlude was also a variation of the same intro riff.
Right.
And then that intro riff also comes into Eye for an Eye.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go into Who to a Kill, which is pretty much the first song that I heard. You sent it a while ago to me, I remember. And I was like, wow, he's coming out punchy on this one, man. And what I thought initially just came out like a rocket. You've got this gnarly kind of desert punk sound, even in the vocal. And, you know, after the, I even saw it where, so I was in the studio with you as you were recording some things. I don't know if that cowbell was what I saw recorded.
Yeah.
That was it? Yeah. Okay. All right. Which we got to even chat about that. I mean, you have a piece of history on this album and people probably don't even know it. You have, do you have it? Did Joe take it?
No, it belongs to Joe. I just used it.
Okay.
I used it on the track.
So this cowbell, it's like, you're like, whatever, dude, it's a cowbell. No, this cowbell was originally from Parliament Funkadelic. And I guess maybe they left it somewhere on tour.
Yeah, Joseph Aslin, the guy, the owner of Switchblade Studios, the guy that engineered and mixed the album, he also does sound at Marquee Theater, and I guess P-Funk came through there.
Right.
And they left that cowbell behind, and he scooped it up.
Hey, you know.
So I'm sure it's got plenty of good funk voodoo on there.
It's got some good mojo, let me tell you, man. And they, you know, even in hearing the gang vocals, you got Ben Barnes
from
Broloaf, and what's the other?
It was me, Ben Barnes, and Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle. And Kyle from Old Fashioned Assassin.
Yep.
So what made you think of grabbing those guys?
I wanted to do, originally, I mean, when this song was written, I had these other guys in mind back in Yuma, these punk rock band that I used to jam with.
Right.
Just because I like to keep it local, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, I mean, I would have went as far as to bring those guys up here to do it, but it was been too much logistically. So,
yeah.
Joseph Aslan. And then, so my next go-to, you know, now up here, my go-to guys are Old Fashioned Assassin, man.
Yeah.
I love those guys. I love to support those guys, you know. They're awesome. They're my buds. So,
Who do I kill? What can, or who do I kill? Uh-huh. Let me say, what can you tell me about this track? Like, how did it all come about?
It's got like that kind of like you said, like desert punk, like heavy metal. We definitely stepped into a heavy metal direction.
Yep.
On this, because you know, you can call music whatever you want to call it, but we're just playing heavy rock music. So you get lost in the sauce whenever you start talking about genres too much.
True,
and
true.
Stuff. So we just, whatever we play is what's going to come out. So for Who Do I Kill, that song's got like a power groove, man. Cause like we grew up with Pantera and stuff like that. So,
and it came out heavy.
Yeah. That's what's coming out. So that's when we went with it, and it sets the tone for the album that this is going to be a bit heavier than our last two releases.
Definitely. And it kind of ties into, for me, with the next track, which is Hot Pursuit. We got some desert fuzz, real tight rocker. It seems like there's something about a robbery going on. What can you tell me about that?
It's Hot Pursuit, so the chorus is like, we got a 211. That's the code for high speed chase, you know. Kind of like the first three or four songs kind of set the narrative of like, all right, who do I kill? So like, kind of there was like a murder, now Hot Pursuit, now I'm running, you know what I mean? So, and then the next two songs kind of carry on the narratives, you know?
Now I'm interested because we have this interlude, we got this little spacey kind of break. Was this the time that whoever committed these crimes might have gotten into some Scooby snacks that they didn't know what was in it?
Well, it's just taking a breather. I wanted everything to tie right into each other so that you know, it just keeps going and going. Because when we did it, I had in mind like side A and side B. I wasn't really thinking about track one, track two, track three. So
right.
the first two songs kind of just bat, bat, they're just going right into the right into each other. So I put that one in there as like a breather.
Yeah, it, yeah, because after the first two, you need to take a little space.
All right, yeah.
Absolutely, and instead of a you know, another song that's going to have some heavy lyrical content or some of the jumpier stuff.
Yeah.
You're like, huh. It almost feels to me like a concert. I don't know. You know, you go to a show and somebody bursts out of the gate and they got the, everything, the pyro going off and the lights and all this, and they cram their first two songs down your throat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, welcome. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where you are and the interlude. Okay, so Neb Cruiser. And this was the first time that I actually had, I made my emoji. That is my guitar tone emoji right there.
Right.
Because throughout this whole album, the guitar work, oh my God, it's so incredible. But the one thing about Neb Cruiser that hits me right off the bat is this big, gigantic drum sound. Now, what can you tell me about Neb Cruiser or Nebula Cruiser, I guess?
Yeah, basically Nebula Cruiser.
Yeah.
We almost call it Neb Cruiser with the Z-A at the end instead. But
we went stylish.
Nobody would know what the hell we were talking about. Nah, Neb Cruiser is cool. It's kind of like going on a trip, but we're going on a far-out trip, like outer space trip. Like,
right.
Like you're on a hot pursuit and you got away. You got far away, man. You're interstellar now. You're cruising nebulas. That's kind of what the song's about, you know. As far as the drum sound, that fat drum that you're talking about, that huge drum intro, like, Angel nailed it. I was telling him what I was hearing in my head, and he, boom, laid it right out.
It's interesting to me that there are some different bands that they might put it, the drums a little bit lower. I hear that quite a bit. I like to hear a drum further up in the mix. With the guitars, I like to hear it all out. I don't need to have anything in the back. Yeah. Maybe sometimes a haunting vocal or whatever, but I just like it all right in my face.
That's like that meme. It's like they want you to turn up the drums, the bass, the guitar, and the vocals.
So true, so true. Okay, so this next track. Now I know I was there. I saw the lighter.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the what I would guess might be somewhat of a chorus. Such a thick song, and by the time I've reached this part of the release, I realize that you're not pinning yourself down with one specific vocal, and that really challenged me a little bit. I think it challenges the listener to see like, what am I going to get? What's going to happen next? I don't know. Which Zach am I getting?
Right.
And that is a very interesting concept to toy around with throughout the release. So what can you tell me about Don't Look Now?
Well, there certainly are a couple of Zachs on the album.
So yeah, there's a few.
Don't Look Now is like the channeling some old school Clutch, really.
Right, yeah, right.
Channeling my inner Neil Fallon, kind of. They used to rap on some of their songs and stuff, so... The vocal melody is sort of a rap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm writing songs, I want my new song to be different from the last song.
Absolutely.
So if you're doing that and you keep doing that and you keep doing that, eventually you're going to have something that's like kind of way out of the box.
Right.
Which is what we got kind of with the verses on Don't Look Now. But it all ties together with the chorus, I think, because it gets pretty heavy in between those.
Yes, it does.
Sort of like rap verses or whatever.
I think that it's, well, you know, I don't know, man. There's a part of me where now I didn't do anything, but I was there. And I feel this is like one of those other rare instances with a band around here where it doesn't matter whether it's a band that I see a dozen, two dozen times or what have you. And I've seen the progress of the material when they play it live before. And it's like, it's almost like, wow, I don't even, you know, I've heard it so many times. It's weird to even hear it on vinyl or on digital platform or whatever.
And this, I got to see this happening and where you were as you were creating the vocal and where you got stuck and where you, when you went past it. And it was such a unique experience. And thank you for that. I'm glad I got a chance to see it.
Yeah.
Because it really brought to light like how much effort. And it's not just like, you know, I feel like an idiot when I talk on the podcast like the beginning or the end for a minute or a minute and a half, and I screw it up royally like 15 times. And I'm like, I've got to have some disconnect. I've got to be like, I'm an idiot. But then I come to see, you know, in studios and such, it's like, oh, there's a lot of people doing that. Like, it's not always one take. Thank you. Anyway, I just wanted to say thank you for
I remember
for
you being in the room saying, oh, I think it sounds good with the double tracks on there. Like, yeah. All right, well, then let's keep the double tracks then.
I loved it, man. And I was, you know, I messaged you earlier because you sent me the release, and I was like, you know, on Bandcamp, you can only get a couple of the releases. I got a chance to listen to it all, but I got to admit, I went over to Don't Look Now first because I wanted to see, like, what happened? Where did it go? And I got to I got to see it, and I was so impressed with it, man. So the Scattered Sun Parade, kind of like an instrumental. Yeah. Like, okay, what is this? Is this like some sort of homage or something to desert culture?
Sort of. Like that track and the next track is called Desert Boogie as well. They're both instrumental tracks for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Scattered Sun Parade is just a actually it's an homage to some old friends in my old band Stone, because the riff, one of the riffs in there, about halfway through when everything cuts out and it's just the guitar for a while,
right?
That's a riff that we had as a band. Well, that was like a song that we had as a band.
And what was the band's name?
We were called Stoned.
It's just Stoned. Yeah. You know, just regular old Stoned.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Is that music anywhere? Is it available?
I got it. I think I'm the only one that has it.
What genre? What do we got?
We were like alternative, like grunge kind of stuff. Sure. I've always been like more of a grunge guy. And then if you go a step heavier than grunge, you end up in like stoner rock.
You know, and that's so funny you say that, because even just going back for a sec to Mother Love Bone. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, the Coors Light got me.
It's all right.
as I'm hearing them, whether it's whatever, Captain High Top or Star Dog Champion, Capricorn Sister, I'm like, slow them down a little bit, move the arrangement around. You got yourself a stoner rock song, and I find myself doing that even with Doom, you know, like, Will It Doom, you know, the like, if I slow this down a little bit, how doomy can it get, and, you know. Yeah. And just moving stuff around. And so I can understand what you say when it's like, you know, you don't mess around. You don't have to worry about genre. Just like what you like.
Right.
But yeah, I could see where. And I think that's, you know, even thinking about like a band like Caius, back when Headbangers Ball was on, I remember that, you know, it went from, you know, everybody wearing leather and feather boas and all that kind of stuff. And it started, grunge started slowly creeping into Headbangers Ball, and then they put this other stuff on there that I didn't know what it was, and it wound up being Caius and the Sword, and even Alabama Thunder Pussy. Yeah, good stuff.
I don't think the Sword was a part of that wave. Were they? Were they out that long ago?
I remember seeing them on the Ball, and just like, I know I like it. I don't know what it is, but I know I like it. Like. You know, I talk with Melissa from Stoner Witch Radio, and we're kind of in the same boat where it's like we knew we liked this stuff, just didn't know what it was. And then just after research, you know, you start going down the rabbit hole of all the stuff that you missed. Mm-hmm. You know, like I casually heard Sleep, from the movie Gummo. And there were these two horrendous looking people, gas huffing, just ne'er-do-wells.
This shitty rabbit stinks.
Yeah. Oh, all right. You know it. All right. So yeah, and they got the BMX bikes, and they're strolling down to Dragonaut. Was it Dragonaut? I think it was. And I was just like, I like this. And I just put it away. I put it away. And that was, that was over 20 years ago. And then I went back and I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, this was what it was. Oh, I gotcha.
Well, it's like you listen to grunge your whole, youth, basically. And then where do you go from there? You start getting into bands like you said, Caius and and Alabama Thunderpussy. Like, that's the shit that I liked. I like that vocal style. Alabama Thunderpussy, like Orange Goblin.
Yep.
Shit like that. Mm-hmm. Man, I really dug that. And then you get into, Electric Wizard. And then as you get into Electric Wizard, you start going into, St. Vitus and stuff like that. Old school shit, you know?
Yeah, you start getting more into the Doom category, you know? Yeah, totally. Now, we're going to go into that with the next track, this Desert Boogie. So, was this a song that John Pino was on?
Yes.
I remember it. I remember hearing it. And it's just so magical to me to know. Like, I saw him playing that, and now it's here. There's this trippy kind of Doors vibe, Native American influence, maybe. I just like I like the ending. I knew it was coming. Yeah. I just didn't know when. Yeah. I love the vibe of that and how that just flows. And what did you say? Something like, what's crazy is how finite things are.
Yeah.
I love that. That's a great place to put it. What made you, want to add that at the end?
That song has been written for a long time. And then that little spoken word thing came out right at the very end as we were recording it.
You just felt it.
I just wanted to mix it up on the album, really, man. I wanted to add a lot of elements, you know. It took us 13 months to record this album.
Right.
So throughout all the time, you know, I got the rough mixes and shit, like everything that we're working on so far. And I'm listening to this stuff and I'm driving to work, you know. Weeks are gone by, you know. I start getting more ideas. Maybe we should go in and do this.
Right.
Maybe we should do this. And then so when we get to Desert Boogie, that's one of the ideas that hit me. Like, because I'm a huge fan of the Doors. I love the Doors.
Right.
And I love Jim Moore. They did an album to his poems. He recorded his spoken word poems. And after he died, they went and added music to it.
Right.
And
right.
That album is awesome, dude. I don't know if you've ever listened to it.
I haven't. I vaguely remember like in the movie, him recording the poems and et cetera. And I didn't know that they did anything, but I have to check that out.
The album's good. It's all on Spotify and stuff.
All right. So, sounds like something to check out.
But yeah, just having, and that's probably another reason why it took so long to do the album too, because the longer that I'm sitting here listening to it, I keep coming up with more ideas.
And like I said before, it sounds very intricate. It sounds like there has been a ton of time. This is not something where it's just, yeah, lay the tracks, one take, we're out, we're done. And that this sounds like a project that needed to take time.
Well, yeah, anything worth doing is worth doing the right way.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. And let's get into the next track where we have Jesse Mitchell from Hove and Weep. Brings that organ in, and I tell you, man, it brings everything really, it brings it in very well together. The name of the track is called Dawn. Angel in this fucking track. Jeez, man, he just nails it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it is a burner of a track, and then we've got this little piece that slows down. What can you tell me about Dawn?
Angel deserves mad props for Dawn, man. He killed it on there. I wish he was here right now, but he's been working out there in Yuma and shit. Dawn is a song that was not originally supposed to go on this album. We had another song on there in its place that we took out. So Dawn is a song that I wrote when I was probably like 18 years old.
Okay.
That's how long that song's been around.
Been sitting on it for a little bit.
Yeah, and it's got like that heavy sleep vibe in the vocals, man. And then what they're like, more like a heavy blues kind of feel and the guitar and the music and stuff. Goes all over the place, man. We got the Black Sabbath interludes, you know. Let the drums get some love on there. There's some drum solos going on.
And that's the thing I love about this is covering the gambit in this release. This isn't just like you're not just hearing the same riff. You're not just hearing the same beat over and over. And that is it. You know, it takes a while, man, because you really got to listen and a few times. And with each one, you get a different layer. It's like peeling that onion, you know?
Yeah, thank you.
So with Keepsakes, this is a part again where it comes to me through the vocal. You've got this lyrical structure that you create. Doesn't matter whether it's on Keepsakes, it's on other songs that you've done too, where there are parts where like I'm nervous almost to see where it's gonna land. Like, all right, like not like impress me, bro, but like crossing my arms, like, how the fuck are you gonna pull that off? Like, you started the lyric here. How are you putting it here? And how is it working?
Rhythmically.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's already over, and it worked.
Yeah.
Like, how does that, because not a lot of people do that. How or why is that happening?
I think what you're pointing out is called a fermata, where part of the this verse is running into the next verse.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So, yes.
It's like, I don't know. I've been writing lyrics for years. Like, writing is how I got into music.
Right.
I probably wouldn't be playing music if I wasn't writing lyrics. And then lyrics and rhythm go hand in hand, you know. If you're going to be a good lyricist, you got to have good rhythm. And just... If it feels like it, the line is barely squeezing in there, then that's the max number of syllables that I could have used to get my point across.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I take lyrics. Lyrics are like almost more important to me than the music, you know?
Okay.
The music to me is kind of the landscape for me to write my lyrics over.
Basically. And this is something that is slightly different than the norm. You know, you get a lot of bands, and I've asked the question tons of times, 90% of the time it's the same thing. Music comes first, then the lyrics. For you, it could be the other way around, and then you got to work around the lyric.
Well, it has been that way around. I typically work with the music first, but
right.
When it comes time to write the lyrics, to me, it's really got to be... It's almost like, for me, it's got to be perfect, you know?
Sure.
The lyrics, the song. And I always struggled with that when I was younger, when I was in bands with guys in high school and shit. And it's like, write a song about decapitated black water zombies and shit. It's like, I can't do that. I'm going to write what I write. Because anytime I've ever tried to write about a subject, it comes out shitty.
Right. Almost like, I don't want to say insincere,
right,
but it's not where your heart is.
For sure.
Yeah. That makes total sense, man. And what is it called? Fermata?
I think, I'm pretty sure the correct term is a fermata.
You know, in doing this, in interviews and stuff, I really should figure some shit out.
It's like happy birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, happy starts before the actual beat.
That's
the fermata.
There's a hip hop artist that does it. Well, there's a few. There's a lot of East Coast guys, Vinny Paz and Ill Bill. They do that kind of rhyming scheme. And it's like, wait, where or the rhyme, in the lyrics is like not at the end. It's the word before it.
Oh yeah, I love that too.
And I don't know what that is. I really should do some music theory or something and try to figure this out. So I don't sound like such an idiot.
I really appreciate good hip-hop artists, too, man. And I like hip-hop lyrics, too. And so if I can make more words rhyme in a line, then I will, instead of just the last word.
Yeah, especially when it's, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, Gin and Juice, yeah, I get that. Great song or whatever bumping track you want to listen to. But sometimes, man, you just want to hear a good lyric.
Yeah.
With a good beat, but you also want to hear a good
lyrics
lyric.
Are what, yeah. And speaking of Keepsakes, one of my favorite lines in there, I tried to rhyme as much as I could. And it goes, Spoiled by your adulation, have exceeded in my prayer, toiled through your constellation, sift through your heavens, not to find you there. So
getting a little deep there, my friend. This is more just more than just drinking Coors Light and with some dogs by us and having YouTube in the background.
Yeah.
That's some heavy shit.
Thank you.
But I appreciate that. I appreciate you taking the time, man. You took the time to find what you wanted, and you know what? I don't know what this release would have been if it took 3 months. You know, maybe it had to happen this way.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, go with it and just roll with it. Was that a burp I heard?
She's talking to me.
Oh, she's talking. Oh,
what do you want?
Is she?
I think she probably needs to go outside.
Oh, she needs to go outside. All right, hold on. We'll break. We'll get back into the interview in just a minute, but first, let's hear from Mucho Printing.
Yeah, hey, what's up, big dogs? This is Mucho Drums here to tell you a little bit about my new company, Mucho Printing. Now, I played in multiple bands for several years, and I know how important it is to leave your mark after any show. Even before hitting that first note, you want the crowd to know who you are and remember who's responsible for the sore necks the next morning. Presentation is an important factor in any band's mission to the top, and that's where we come in. Fully printed backdrops, removable bass drum covers, mesh cab covers, flags. These are just a few products that we can offer to you. We're based out of Los Angeles, California, and can ship anywhere in the United States. More importantly, our goal is to help promote bands off the stage as well. With every order, we'll post pictures of the prints, along with info about the band and any other advertisements you'd like us to include. Please check us out on Instagram and Facebook by searching Mutual Printing. Send us a message for any details. Hope all of you are staying safe, strong, and powerful out there. And remember, you win some, you lose some, but nothing beats getting some. Cheers, my friends.
All right, we had to take a little bit of a dog break and a little bit of a drink break and everything else break. And now we're back. And last time we were touching on keepsakes and lyrics. And just curious, out of curiosity, do you have any lyricists that are some of your favorites?
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, I used to study like Metallica lyrics, and we were talking about Jim Morrison earlier. I used to read all his poetry, and I think James Hetfield was a really great lyricist, you know, for a monumental band in the heavy music scene. I mean, his lyrics are pretty great.
And they've progressed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, you could tell the difference between what a Kill 'Em All lyric is, yeah, and even say And Justice for All, you know, or Master of Puppets, whatever, Ride the Lightning. There's so much progression at each time. It's like, you know, some people wonder, you know, oh, why are they at the top of the heap? Right. Have you heard it? Yeah. Have you heard the material?
Right.
Seriously?
I used to have And Justice for All on cassette, and I would take that little booklet to school, man, and I'd just be reading the lyrics as you study those things, dude.
I did the same exact thing. Yeah. I would memorize the lyrics. I was one of those geeky kids. I still do it now. Now I have to wear readers to see it because print's so damn small. Yeah. But I'd open up the booklet, and especially when I got a CD, I was like, "Ooh, it's bigger," and I would go over and I would see, "Oh, who produced this one? Oh, who mixed this?" You know, and then I would, when I was way younger, I would see these weird names next to the song, and I'm like, "I don't know who that is." Didn't even know somebody else wrote the song, you know. Yeah. And all that comes around, and I'm just really geeked out for that.
That
so
was
I guess
always a major turnoff for me when I found out somebody else wrote the song.
Yeah, right. it kind of changes it a little.
Yeah.
And then when you hear different things, I was talking about Stevie Nicks, and there was this whole thing about her and Prince, and Prince wrote a track for her, mm-hmm, that she's like, "I really just don't think that I can sing it. I don't think I could pull it off." And he wound up doing it. I think he did okay. The song was Purple Rain. Mm. And, you know, but you know, you look at some of the stuff that Prince wrote, I mean, that you might even not know. Like, he wrote for Sheena Easton. He wrote, I think he wrote some stuff for Carmen Electra when she was in music, quote unquote. And
that's interesting because you said earlier about how you know, I tend to have like two or three different voices throughout the album, and that I can write, when I'm writing lyrics, I'm writing in different voices, you know. And to me, I'm not writing in Zach voice number one or Zach voice number two, I'm right. And then, like, this is my Phil and Sammo voice right here. And this right here is my Neil Fallon voice.
So, right, right.
You know what I mean? So, to me, it's just the people that I looked up to, you know. And then I wanted to say, like, reading in the booklets and finding all the people's names, you know, that could be one of the really helpful resource, you know what I mean? If you're trying to get in touch with people now in this day and age,
absolutely,
you can look those people up out of those album credits, man, and say what's up to them.
Yeah, because, I mean, what, you know, we're in this different space, you know. I could imagine it doesn't matter whether it's Who to a Kill, whether it's Old Fashioned Assassin, whether it's Stone Witch, whether it's Broloaf or whatever it is, you could imagine all this stuff. Easily major label, easily, but it ain't there. It just, it's,
you know, I think it's better that way, honestly, because what's the major label gonna do? They're gonna pump a bunch of money into it and they're gonna want their money back.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's it, you know. And if the band's not delivering, because I think it's not in the forefront of our culture for a reason, because this, what is in the mainstream is just easily, you know, digestible music to listen to while you're shopping at Walmart, shit like that.
Yeah, I've seen that. I felt like there's certain songs that, oh, that's going to be a modestly sad song that I'm going to hear when I'm at the supermarket.
Yeah.
This is a song where they're using the popular trope, whatever it is, whether it's a horn here or an O-O-O there, or a certain BPM that just, it's like, and the voices are so close. Maybe it's, I don't know exactly, maybe it's because of some pitch correction, I don't know. Nah. But the voices seem to sound a lot alike, and it could just be my age. But then it seems very disposable.
And I would tell you every female song I heard on the radio was Rihanna. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then every guy on the radio is like Quavo or Justin Bieber. You know, they all sound like that to me. And I only know all these names because I got kids and they keep me hip to what's happening right now.
Even in modern country, the new country, quote unquote,
God,
you know, they're
garbage.
Going for that pop country, which, you know, it has its points. I won't slag it because, you know, you like what you like, but it's just like, it kind of feel like I hear the same voice. I definitely hear the same main ideas.
Oh, the same cadence, the same BPMs, basically all in the same keys.
Yep.
And, you know what I mean? And they did one where they ran them all together, like the top 40 country songs. They just run right into one another, you know.
I could totally understand that.
You know, one person, there's a couple people wrote a number of the number one pop hits, you know, since the 90s.
Yeah, I had a client from a couple years ago, and that's what she did. She was a songwriter. And she wrote for very well-known acts, real, like, top-of-the-chart people. And I would always have to wonder, because she said, like, it hurt her where she would write a lyric, and maybe, like you say, you know, maybe I'm kind of feeling a Zach 1 or a Zach 2. Yeah. It's like, we want you to say it in this cadence and this way, and they just don't. I wonder how heartbreaking that is when they hear so, or they're like, or maybe it's like, you know, if you just did it this way, it probably would have been a hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, yeah, God, it's just, I think the first person I ever saw was Desmond Child when I saw him on the different Kiss releases.
Yeah.
And I was just like, who is this guy? I don't know. I don't know what this guy does. And then I found out, like, you know, he's writing material.
Yeah. So. Well, on the flip side of that, somebody that's written a lot of popular songs that you might not realize was Bob Dylan, that I really love as a lyricist. And then when I see his name on the in the song credits, I'm actually delighted. Like, wow, I didn't know that. Or,
yeah.
Or, oh, I had a villain that was his stuff, you know. Like, if you don't know it, then you're listening to old Johnny Cash the whole time you're growing up. And then once you figure it out, like, oh, Bob Dylan wrote that? Like, Damn, what has this man not done? So,
yep.
I love him, and I love, you know, when I was a kid, there was nobody, like, telling me about what the good rock and roll music was, and, like, Eminem was a big thing, and I liked Eminem a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah, why not?
And I learned a lot about writing lyrics and rhythm and stuff from listening to him as a kid, and now... As an adult, I really enjoy Kendrick Lamar. He's a rapper. I don't know if you ever listen to him.
Yeah. I didn't get it at first until, gosh, what was it? I think there was something on Vice.
Yeah.
And they explained, like, what is he doing for the rap community? How is he progressing the genre? And after that, I was sold. I was like, wait, let me listen to this. And granted... There was a part of me, maybe I was in a bad space. Like, I shouldn't have listened to it then. But I, you know, I gave it another try.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, dude, yeah, you do you, man.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely it is. So, okay, we're going to go into the title track. And we've got Eye for an Eye. We've got a, you know, a little bit spacey, power metal, some almost like a thrashy guitar, kind of not... technically thrash, but it's in that chord or whatever, you know, whatever you want to say.
In a vein.
Yeah, in that vein. And just an incredible way to end this album. What can you tell me about Eye for an Eye?
Well, I'm glad that you had troubles trying to describe it, because that's what we aim for as a band. To just incorporate all these different elements. It starts out as like a sort of a standard bluesy kind of ballad.
Right.
And then just progresses and gets heavier and heavier. I've been telling people that's the most musical thing that I've ever done thus far. So, like, when it breaks into, like, the little clean interlude with the twin guitar leads and then there's synthesizers in the background and stuff, like, that's straight up... some old school Metallica coming out of me.
It's exactly what I heard.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. I didn't want to say it because I don't know, but I heard that tone.
Uh-huh.
An incredible way to end the album. And is that Eye for an Eye the sign of what's to come for Who Do It Kill?
You mean like we're gonna release a new one called Tooth for a Tooth?
Yeah, something like that, or. Yeah, what would be Eye for an Eye, you know, pupils all around? Yeah. I don't know.
We're thinking about calling it Eye for an Eye. So, like, instead of Eye for an Eye, no, I'm kidding.
Foreign Eyes.
Yeah, Eye, Foreign Eye.
I please do that, yes. Part two.
We do have a song written called Tooth for a Tooth already.
Well, maybe if you do some crossover music, you could have Cross-Eyed.
Over
across, yeah, that might be something special. So, okay, you worked with Joe Assalin, or Joseph Assalin from Switchblade.
Yeah,
what was it like working with him?
Oh man, he's killer. From the moment that we met, we hit it off right off the bat. You know, we're all into the same shit, and he worked closely with Old Fashioned Assassin on their last two records that they've done, and that's how I looked him up. And just right from the get-go, man, he was real warm and welcoming into his studio. You know, he let us act a fool in there and get silly and stuff, you know.
I think that's where you get some magic.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. One thing that's important to me is that once we get in the studio, we can get comfortable and really be ourselves, you know. If we're in there trying to, like, mind our P's and Q's, and, you know, we can't really get that vibe going on.
Exactly. You got to be relaxed. You got to be comfortable.
We might not be able to just live in there for, you know, 3 months like Rolling Stones.
Yeah, right.
But at least we can go in there and make it our little home for the session or whatever. And he was real accommodating with that. But he, busy guy, you know. Before all this COVID stuff started, everybody was real busy.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, working around his schedule and then working around our schedule and what's viable financially and stuff like that. It just took, you know, over a year to get it done. But anytime we were over there, it was great. Anything that I heard that, you know, I anything that I brought up about the mix, he was right there on it, real easy to communicate with. And even, you know, having suggestions and stuff, like he brought the guys in for the gang vocals. He brought the guy in for the auxiliary percussion and stuff right. like that. So just working with him, you know, he's got a lot of connects out here, a lot of contacts. He went to school at Crass out there.
Right.
And just been involved in the scene for a long time out here locally.
Definitely somebody to check out and to at least get in the studio and see what he's got and what it's all about.
Oh, most definitely.
Now, mastering. Tony Reed.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. How'd you hook up with him?
Well, I'm not trying to brag, but I got his number in my phone. We, we text sometime.
A little humble brag right there.
I'm consider myself pretty good friends with Buddy and them from Great Electric Quest.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty cool guys, and they have a pretty close relationship with Tony. And he put me through with Tony, and I probably told him at least 3 times, all right, we're ready.
Right.
And then 3 months go by, you know. But when I was finally ready, I told him, like, look, man, this thing's taking a long time, but it's done now. It's finished.
Right.
Do you still want to work with us? And he's like, yeah, absolutely, man. I'm always down to work on music. That's what he told me. So
that is so cool.
Yeah, man.
Oh, that is so... It's so great where you could reach out to somebody like that, of that caliber, and just spin it and like, yeah, what do you need?
I took time out in one message to tell him how much I liked Moss Generator.
Of course.
And Big Scene at Nowhere is fucking awesome. Have you listened to that album?
Yeah. They've got so much material. You know, it's like, what was the, there was a tour here that I completely took for granted. I think it was... Was it the Sword and Moss Generator at Rebel Lounge?
Recently?
Nah, it was a while ago. But I was like, you know, it was one of those things where I should have bought the ticket. I should have went and gotten the ticket. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll just get it when I'm there. And I walked up, bam, sold out.
Yeah.
I was like, just one more? Just one ticket more? Like, I'll crouch down. I'll get in a corner. They're like, no, can't. Not one more person.
Like, my whole introduction into like the world of like Ripple music and stuff was because that guy that I wanted to do our artwork originally, Josh Foster back home.
Okay.
Curated the stoner rock music scene back home. And really? Actually, this is Texarkana. This is like a little town, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Little blop on the map, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's bringing in Moss Generator with Mothership. They came and played a show together, dude.
Mm.
And that opened my eyes. That blew me away because before right. that, I thought that all that rock and roll shit was in the past, really. And like everything that was accessible now was like pop punk and
yep.
and mainstream shit. And like my eyes weren't really open to like Ripple music and what they yep. got going on. So and then that was my first time hearing Moss Generator and Mothership, and I've been huge fans of both bands and really have like tried to dive into the scene since then.
It's kind of, I have a similar kind of thing and discussed it. There was, you know, I knew I liked the music and when I moved out to Arizona, I didn't really see it a lot in South Florida, to be honest with you. And apparently I missed out on a few bands, like in the Miami area, that I just didn't know. And when I came out here, one of the first real quality shows that I saw was, let's see. So it was OFA opened, and Wolves of Winter. Haven't heard those guys in a while. Mm-hmm. Dead Canyon.
Yeah.
Then there was the Great Electric Quest. And Mothership.
Yeah.
I mean, like, solid bill, top to bottom. And I did that. Yeah. I think Dead Canyon might have played that night. I'm not sure. I gotta look back. But wow, what a great night. And it really solidified it for me and solidified some other things, kind of childish, but I still like it. Like, when I lived in New York, a lot of times the shows didn't start till 10.
And, you know, it's like 2 in the morning, and they're still playing or what have you. Then when I went down to Florida, and I'm at a show, and I'm there at about 10:30, and I hear just like 5 bars of a song, and the show's over. Not just the first act. The whole show is over.
Right.
I'm like, what did I miss? And then I come out here, and like I remember, you know, kind of looking at the clock, and I was like, ah, it's 12:30. I wonder if Mothership's going to come on soon. You know? And they came on, and... You know, they didn't disappoint, and they didn't scrimp on the set. They played a full set, and it just destroyed. And my eyes were just wide. You know that point when your eyes are so wide that, like, personally, I forget to take out my phone. Yeah. I forget to record stuff because I'm like, I'm just so into it.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I was like, shit, I got to get some material. I barely got anything of Mothership that night because I was just like, yes, this is what I'm doing. This is it, man. This is the goods.
Yeah. Dude, Mothership will do that too, bro. Every time I see them, I'm blown away.
Yeah, they definitely don't disappoint.
You know what? They bring out my inner 16-year-old me. He's still in there somewhere.
We all have that. I mean, you know, it doesn't look on the outside, but in the inside, yeah. Okay, so we've had this pandemic thing going on. We've got this COVID problem, and... I'm curious because it's come up in a few episodes. What are you doing during this to stay creative? And is it influencing you in any way?
Well, I've been an essential employee since this whole thing has been kicked off. So,
right.
I've been working, man. I've been working a lot. We got another baby coming later this year.
Congratulations. So.
Yeah, I really wanted to get this album out, you know, get it out to the people, and then kind of, you know, move on to the next thing, you know what I mean? Because I was going to hold on to the album, but then I'm like, what am I waiting for? You know, if I hold on to this thing, then I'm going to be holding on to it and holding on to it and holding on to it. So let's just put it out.
Yeah.
You know, let's get it out to the people. It's going to be streaming on all the platforms once it releases. The day it releases is on the 15th of August. It's going to be streaming everywhere.
Oh, that's awesome.
Also, so, you know, anybody can pay however much they want to pay for the album. Or you can listen to it for free on Spotify and all that shit. But
are you going to be making any physical copy?
I'd like to put it on vinyl for sure. Definitely... So far, this is the first album that we've never put on any kind of physical format. But typically, we run at least like 1,000 CDs or so.
Sure.
But I don't even think that we're going to do CDs this time. I think if we do anything physical, it'll go straight to vinyl.
Vinyl, and maybe, and like I said, you know, everybody, you do it if you want. Cassettes, for some reason,
yeah,
very hot. And I really swear I look at them as like, like something you'd put on your shelf. Like, I don't know, are we gonna comb all the Goodwills and stuff, right, to find a cassette player?
I got a stack of cassettes that I buy off bands when I see them.
Wow. I really don't have very many. I have some old cassettes.
The key to the cassette is to put that download code in there.
Yeah.
So now you got it on digital and you take a little something home.
Yep. Yeah, a little souvenir.
Other parts of the country are just up to speed. You know, I handed one to somebody in Arkansas. They're like, what am I supposed to do with this? I'm like, keep it. It's for, like, you know, nostalgia.
It has music on it and everything.
You can put it in a tape player and play it if you want.
That'd be great. Well, yeah, that's okay. You know, different strokes, different folks.
No, we really want to put it on vinyl. So if we do move forward with that, then that's, you know, probably not CDs, but definitely vinyl.
Gotcha. So what's going to be the follow-up? You got anything in the works yet?
Yeah, definitely. We've been recording simultaneously a 5-song EP that I actually recorded all the instruments on. So I'm doing drums, bass, vocals, guitars, some synthesizer. I did all that with this guy, Adrian, who runs a studio called Another Smooth Mix out of Yuma, Arizona. So earlier I said the song Dawn wasn't going on there and that we swapped it out with another song. So the song that was originally on Eye for an Eye, I took off and redid it for this other EP.
Okay, all right.
So that's going to be 5 songs, but a couple of the songs are pretty lengthy, so I think it comes out to about a good 30 minutes.
It's a full release right there, man.
Yeah.
And is there any chance that you might do a cover one day?
Oh, we do have a cover in the works, actually, and I don't want to say too much right now, but coming around, you know, October, it's more like a Halloween theme cover.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, most definitely. And I've been talking to some guys, and we're talking about going into the studio and doing the whole Black Flag Nervous Breakdown album.
Nice.
Yeah, so we're going to go in and redo that whole album, man.
That would be killer.
That's about 5 minutes of music.
Yeah. So. Too true. Yeah. Very true. But hey, man, that's what it was. That's what it was. Now, with the releases that you've had and even the time that we are at now, I don't know if at shows, if you've recorded yourself live, I don't know if you have that material. Do you think that there will ever be a Who Do I Kill live album?
We have like an entire live pro shot concert, but the audio wasn't recorded properly. So as far as like live audio, we've got some stuff, but I don't think it's like up to par with like having it released or anything like that.
Gotcha.
As a band, we don't really play out enough right now. So, I mean, we'd really have to tighten up as a unit before I'd even want to do a live album or something like that. You know?
Fair enough. And are you shopping around to see if maybe somebody wants to release this on vinyl? Or are you thinking of doing it DIY?
I think we're just going to go independent, man, because I don't really know. I have shopped it around to some people, and I haven't really got any response. But, I mean, like, my situation and our situation as a band, I don't really know if it's, you know, if we should go that route with a label or something like that, you know?
Right.
I don't really know what either one of us would be able to offer each other besides, like, you know, obviously they can just, you know, distribute it at other places that I can't, but as far as like being obligated to like push a follow-up or something like that, I just don't know. You know, I don't really know what the rules are to all that, so
I know
if I do it myself,
yeah,
you know, we can push it out. But I mean, I definitely would be open to it. I'm not knocking it at all. But I just know, like, my situation, you know, I got to work full time and take care of my family and stuff. So, like, being a band is a full time deal. Or I don't really know what the label really wants from the bands right now. You know what I mean?
You know, it's funny. Last year, if we had the same conversation, it would have been very simple. They want good, you know, good stuff, obviously, good music, nothing, no garbage. And we want to be sure that you promote it. And they're like, okay, what's one of the best ways to promote it? Go out on tour.
Yeah.
Well, we can't do that now.
Right.
So I think some of this stuff is going to change a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to have to get creative now on how we release things or even like different merchandise that maybe we haven't thought of before that, that might be just another avenue. Who knows, man?
Yeah.
I really don't know what the future is. You know, I didn't write this down before, but I was just curious. So if you were to take some Who Do I Kill music, doesn't matter what track or even what album, and what either movie franchise, which I've asked this before, which movie franchise would you want to be in, you know, as a soundtrack, or what kind of commercial?
Well, as far as like a franchise of movies, franchise I really loved as a kid playing the video games is Resident Evil, and whatever they've done with the movies is, you know, whatever you think. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not crazy about the movies, but I really loved the games as a kid, and I think that our music would probably do good on something like that, watching a bunch of zombies.
That'll work.
You know, rip somebody apart.
Even maybe, possibly, dare I say it, they might even have
a special zombie, maybe Zach the zombie.
Zach the zombie makes a guess.
See where I went there. Yeah. Right on. So, in conclusion here, first off, just want to say thank you for allowing me to listen to this incredible release. People, go out and check this out, man. It's going to be on all streaming platforms in just about 2 weeks or so. Take a listen and envelop yourself in this. Enjoy it. And Zach, do you have a question that I could ask the next band I'm going to interview?
Yeah, when's your next show, dude?
Yeah, right. Seriously. All right. Yeah, we'll leave it right there. Zach, thank you so much as always. I love hanging out with you, brother. It doesn't matter whether I'm watching you on stage or just hanging out in the crowd. It's an honor and a pleasure to know you. And thanks, and we're going to talk again real soon.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Take care, brother.
All right.
Thanks, Zach, so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. Also, huge thanks goes out to Fuzzy Cracklins and Mucho Printing. See, this is what the scene is about. Everybody helping each other to just keep moving forward, onward, and upward. Also, CraniumRadio.com, Sunday evenings, The Doom Tomb, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check it out if you like this kind of music. I play all kinds of stuff. Everything related to this genre that you can possibly imagine. Also, doomtombpodcast@gmail.com. That is how to reach us, and doomtombpodcast across all forms of social media. Thanks, everybody. We got another episode coming right around the corner, so sit tight. And until that next time, meantime and in between time, enjoy yourselves, stay healthy, stay happy, and above all, don't forget to stay heavy.